You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Man there trying to stop Drogba getting himself into further trouble.
Oh, it's not a bad ball for Pelé on the right side. It's Carlos Alberto. And what a great goal that was! Carlos Alberto!
Maradona just walked away from Huddle then. Maradona.
Argentina the lead, the England players protesting to the referee.
Halve finale komen. Ik heb opeens zo'n gevoel dat we in de halve finale gaan komen. Met het balbezit voor Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer speelt de bal heel goed naar Dennis Bergkamp. Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp neemt de bal aan! Dennis Bergkamp!
Dennis Bergkamp! Dennis Bergkamp!
And welcome to the second episode of the Scoreless Thriller Podcast. You're joined as always by Alex, your host, and Leon. Leon, how are you doing today?
I'm great. So happy to be here.
So on your kind of first reflection, today we're going to be talking about Italy versus South Korea from 2002 World Cup. What was your biggest change you saw from the first game that we watched from 1982?
Way more actions. Action. There was actually some stuff going on, so that was great. It was way more fun to watch, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's
jump into it. So this right off the bat, this game is pretty well known for being extremely controversial. We'll start by laying a bit of the groundwork for basing around what happened in the game. So it's from the 2002 World Cup, the last 16 match. Do you have any actual memories of watching this game?
Oh yeah. Not this particular match actually, but I do have a lot of memories concerning the World Cup, because I mean Germany got into the final and played Brazil, and I was so excited. I couldn't actually watch it, so I was at my grandma's house, and I always run to like the living room where everyone was watching to check the score, and then I was like crying at the end when Ronaldo scored again.
Yeah, no, for Irish people, the 2002 World Cup is sort of always memorable for the Saipan Roy Keane incident. So, you know, it's the thing which divided a nation for 10 years afterwards. Even up to this point, you know, you could start, if you're worried as to start a conversation with an Irish person, you ask them, are they Team McCarthy or Team Keane? Coming from Cork, we were almost exclusively Team Keane. But, you know, really, probably, you know, he was probably right to be sent home. But we'll discuss that another time. So, this game is extremely controversial for the refereeing. Just to give an example of it, I think it would be Yesterday I saw an article in The Guardian where a football journalist referred to it as his favourite World Cup game memory.
Which is insane that people are still writing about this match. Mm. I mean, that says a lot.
Yeah. And this article, what internet message boards can be sort of, you know, contentious places at the best of time. At the best of time. So this article didn't really receive the best response. So I have, you know, one the second highest rated responses to it. It comes from a guy called Gio Piso, and Gio Piso writes in a very kind of, you know, down to earth. He's not going to jump to any massive conclusions about this game. You know, he's level matters. Gio Piso is a man of the facts, let's just say that, okay? So now, to quote Gio Piso, this is what he says. He says, "Wow, this is actually astounding. Talk about rewriting history. There were few complaints at the time. In what world exactly? Everybody knew it was a scandal, which coincidentally was repeated a few days later against Spain. Yes, I am Italian, but that doesn't mean I can't point out when things simply aren't true. I was living in Dublin at the time, so it's not like I was only surrounded by angry Italians." Tomasi's goal disallowed for offside. Sure, no need to mention he was about 2 meters onside. Sure, you can say it's all opinions. Likewise, 1% of scientists, for one reason or another, will tell you they're not convinced about climate change, and they're entitled to have their opinion.
Okay.
This game is almost universally considered one of the most scandalous in the history of the World Cup. And you chose it as your favourite ever. Great taste.
Wow. So salty.
So, you know.
I love the comparison to climate change.
Yeah.
Like, there's the scientific consensus on this match is as strong as it is on climate change. It has to be.
Gio Piso, he knows his facts, you know. It's at the same level to disagreeing about this game as it is to be a climate change denier.
Yeah.
In his view.
Yeah.
So, That's his view. So,
although I think he makes an important point there, that I mean, he argues that he was not in Italy at that time, right? But in general, like, it was not just Italy, but it was Europe as a whole, which were not just regarding this particular match, but in general, very skeptical of the World Cup. Mm. So this also plays into the backstory of the match, I think. That they thought that, wow, why is this taking place in Japan and South Korea? Like, they have no traditional football history and whatnot. So already, right from the outset of the whole tournament, you had this criticism against the host and the way of playing football, living football.
Like. Mm. And I think from that point, that kind of fills into a lot of the kind of paranoia about, you know, about South Korea and Japan going further. You know, even from the start, people were like, well, no team has ever been knocked out in the group stage before. So let's see what happens to Japan and South Korea. We know that national teams are probably not very good.
Yeah.
Oh, they seem to be doing a lot better than people expected. Could it be just that, you know, host nations always do a lot better than people expect because they have so much stuff going back behind them? No, it has to be built into the kind of FIFA conspiracy about, you know, that they wanted to push the game in Asia. And the only way that they could imagine doing that was to ensure that Japan and South Korea did very well in the tournament. If South Korea doesn't at least reach a semi-final, the tournament will be a failure. No one will be there watching the World Cup. No, it has to be this.
Yeah, I think that's the one storyline. And then the other one is kind of this European football pride. And this is something that already was mentioned in the last podcast, right? So you have this idea of Europe and maybe South America being like the grand pillars in football, in world football. And then suddenly the African teams appear in the World Cup and actually win some matches, and now some Asian teams. And I think this is something that makes a lot of people very salty, as we just heard.
Very salty. It is also incredible.
Like an existential crisis of football pride there.
It's also, I think it's also incredibly funny when you watch a World Cup or a major tournament and they have, you know, the pundits or the commentary team and stuff. And, you know, there are some pundits and stuff you can like tell they've done some sort of background research and stuff, and then there are like, you know, your traditional, you know, ex footballers or some ex managers who kind of turn up for Togo versus Japan and clearly have not done like barely looked at any kind of research, and then they kind of, you know, quote these lines of like cliches. Well, the Asian teams, we know that they're very fit, we know they'll work very hard, And those African teams, we know they're not very, you know, tactically yes. well-minded, but, you know, they're very athletic and strong. Yes. So let's not bother, you know, doing any kind of major research beyond these kind of cliches and stereotypes. You know, we know they're like this. So for the 2002 World Cup, we know the South Koreans will work very hard and they'll be like, they'll try a lot, but, you know, they're not that skillful. They're going to be, you know, once they come up against a kind of team like Italy, which knows all the kind of tactical nous and is kind of smart and everything about the game, they'll kind of show them what's up.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
And that was kind of the mindset of all the European spectators going into this match. Yeah.
Yeah. So this game was in the last 16, like we said earlier. Now, South Korea had kind of already shocked the tournament quite a bit. So they came into this game having won their group with 7 points, having beaten Portugal and Poland as well, and withdrawing with the United States.
Yeah.
In the game against Portugal had two players sent off, so which is, I think, is a little bit already laying a little bit about the background to kind of people's little bit of skepticism towards them. But I think, well, from what I've read, those kind of red cards maybe slightly, one of them was a second yellow, which was slightly harsh, but then the red card was very obviously definite.
Yeah.
Then on the Italian side, they didn't have it quite so good. They had only just about snuck into the last 16. They lost to Croatia. They lost Croatia 2-1, and they beat Ecuador. And in their last game, they got a draw with Mexico, but they only got through because Croatia were surprised by a 1-0 defeat to Ecuador. This was quite a surprise for people because Italy had got to the final of Euro 2000 and lost on the golden goal there, and people were kind of looking at their team with like Maldini, Cannavaro, all these great kind of players, Del Piero, that, you know, this, they would go far in this tournament, but really they kind of already struggled. Trapattoni was kind of, I mean, looked at it a little bit like maybe that his time was a little bit behind him.
Yeah.
He'd won a lot of trophies.
Outdated, yeah.
He's had a lot of trophies before, but that was kind of like almost a decade ago, and maybe he was like a little bit past it, and his kind of innate kind of managerial conservatism was kind of a little bit of a hindrance.
Yeah. Mm. But this idea of like the giant killing in this tournament, right? Mm. Was also established with France, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, they won the World Cup.
Mm.
And still they lost against Senegal.
Yeah.
So it was not just Italy struggling, it was not just Portugal struggling, but it was a lot of European teams.
Yeah, no, like the story of the 2002 World Cup is the shocks everywhere.
Yeah.
So with Turkey yeah. reaching the semi-finals
yeah.
as well.
But already kind of early on in the tournament.
Mm.
So yeah. This is it's all like bits and pieces
building that, into the yeah,
yeah. Into this last round of 16.
And kind of to make things worse for Italy, they were playing South Korea, a team who they'd had their previous like major embarrassment at the World Cup had come in 1966 when they'd lost to North Korea in probably the biggest upset up to that point in the World Cup.
Yeah.
And actually before this game in the stands there was a kind of, they had like a big banner and stuff was saying like again 1966. So the South Koreans were kind of trying to play into this kind of message of them being their kind of bogey, and we're going to try and repeat this major upset
yeah.
from then.
Which is kind of interesting from a politics standpoint, right? Because
yeah.
it was North Korea
yeah.
in 1966, right? But then South Korea now
yeah.
tries to carry on.
Mm.
This victory.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff about like during this tournament. I think there was like messages from North Korean like the government and stuff, like giving their support and stuff to
yeah.
South Korea and stuff. We kind of like very like it's very interesting. People kind of forget that like Korean people generally a lot kind of just consider themselves Korean.
Yeah,
it's not like the kind of political stuff and the little rivalry and stuff.
No, but sports seems to be an important
yeah.
factor there, right? It was also with the last Olympics where then they worked as a unified
yeah,
team.
Yeah, in ice hockey.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, and also coming up to this game, I think there was in the Italian newspapers, they referred to it as the Korean game in 1966 as being their Vietnam. So it kind of like zarped into their memory of this horrific kind of incident which had been inflicted on their national consciousness.
Do we actually do a pause?
Yeah.
Let's see. Mm-hmm. Just a bit.
Welcome back. So after the break, we said we're going to go through the game. Just looking at the Italian lineup, it's kind of like a memory of, you know, early 2000s and like late 90s football legends. So just to give you an idea, you've got Buffon at the back in defence, you've got Maldini, Cocu in midfield, you've got Tomasi, Zambrotta, Totti, Vieri, Del Piero, and even Gattuso is on the bench.
Very, very impressive lineup.
And yeah, and I mean, it was kind of funny watching this game back, just seeing how young they all looked.
Yeah, especially Buffon. It's just insane. Yeah.
And I think
such a young and charismatic looking man. Very impressive.
And I think you forget recently the year before he'd been made the most expensive ever goalkeeper.
Oh yeah. Yes.
So when a record which kind of stood for quite a long time, I think it stood for almost a decade, over a decade, but it was kind of broken in the recent years and for Ederson, I think, and also in Alisson. Okay, so the game starts and, you know, watching the TV, the atmosphere is incredible. You can never really tell, I think, sometimes when you watch a football game on TV quite how good the atmosphere is. Like, sometimes, you know, it's a little bit reliant on TV directors where they kind of turn it up and stuff.
Yeah.
But you can kind of tell that there is a really good atmosphere behind the team. All the stadium is in red, this kind of light red pink, and just the constant noise. You hear the drumming, and it's very it's constant noise. But then even when Messi Correa do a little bit for the forward or get close to the Italian box, you just hear the excitement levels goes up another few decibels. It's crazy.
It was very impressive to witness it.
Mm.
And it was also because before the tournament, a lot of people were scared that people in South Korea or Japan would not be enthusiastic enough, that they wouldn't carry the spirit of the tournament as they should. But this was definitely a case in point that this was not the case. Mm.
So the game kicks off and South Korea are kind of immediately on the attack, and then they get this free kick from a penalty from this cross where our friend Panucci, who is going to be quite a recurring character in our analysis of this game.
Watch out for that guy.
This is a major part to play through this. But South Korea get a penalty in the fourth minute, and
they themselves seem quite surprised by it.
Yeah,
I felt the looks, but telling by the looks on their faces, they were a bit okay. I mean, we're gonna take it.
Yeah,
but that was not necessarily.
Yeah.
A penalty.
Mm. But I mean, judging by the Italian sort of protestations which kind of come later on, I think it's quite low. It's actually quite reasonably a second penalty. But the penalty is taken, and it's an unbelievable save by Buffon.
To be worth all the money there.
Yeah, 31 million well spent.
But that save, that was so
smashed to the keeper's right hand corner, and he gets it right into the corner to pull it out.
A tiger leap and pushes out the ball.
Pushes it out. And then, close to the 20th minute, Italy actually take the lead with the cross, and Vieri gets in at the front post, which is a kind of brilliant kind of header into the top corner.
Yeah, no chance for the goalie. Just very clean.
Yeah, it's very clean, and for a moment, the atmosphere is kind of completely taken out of the stadium.
Of course it is. Yeah,
and Vieri kind of loves it. He's got the kind of finger to his lips, cheeky kind of celebration.
Yeah.
He's silenced the crowd.
Although you have to say that before that, it wasn't by no means clear that this would happen, right? So the first 5 minutes were very active, both sides, especially South Korea. But then it kind of trickled out a bit, nothing much happening. Then the goal happens.
Yeah, and then the goal happens. But it really kind of doesn't really change. I mean, after then, Italy seemed to kind of be quite kind of content for the rest of the half. They kind of sit back a bit. South Korea kind of attack, but don't really look like they're very dangerous.
No.
I think Italy are kind of quite comfortable. Kind of, we've got this, we've got the lead. Let's just kind of play it out. Maybe we'll get something on the counter attack. They have a really good chance late in the first half. Tomasi kind of gets through with Del Piero with this really nice through ball.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think it's also important to note that given what's to come about the referee, that Totti is unbelievably lucky to, well, not unbelievably, but I think he's quite lucky to get away with just the yellow card for quite a strong kind of elbow to the South Korean guy's face when he goes up for a header.
Yeah. But in general, I feel during this time, the refereeing, it's just very balanced. It seems very fair. It might be a bit harsh, But not, I mean, with regards to Totti, it was not. So I feel no. Yeah. Up until this point, it was perfectly fine. I would argue.
Like, I think, like, it's also very funny, like, the commentary we were listening to. I can't remember. I meant to have a look and find out who the commentator was. It could have been Barry Davis, but I think he's got the very kind of, like, classic British kind of old school sort of football commentator kind of voice, you know.
Yeah, he does.
The Italians are retreating into that, you know. It's just very nice kind of dramatic tone to it, and he's immediately kind of quite annoyed personally at the Italians that after having scored this goal that they're been a little bit, you know, defensive.
Yeah, too laid back. They play some very elegant attacks.
Yeah.
Like, you can see that they've got a lovely touch. Yeah. Like, yeah, they, all of them are very, very good players, but then they never really manage to build up that pressure that
there seems to be a thing where it's very kind of Italian old school. I remember Dennis Bergkamp talking about this, that, you know, the team would defend and then they would just kind of punt it long to the forwards, and like one of the forwards, and rather than like someone making a run from like from the wing back position or from midfield to kind of get up with them, they'd be kind of be left alone to do their thing.
Yeah.
So Dennis Bergkamp would be like, the ball would come along to him and he'd be like, well, where is somebody that I can like play the pass to, or like play them into space? But it seems to be
you just don't.
So
you
it's
make
like,
your move.
It's just like it's punted up to Del Piero, and like up to be up Del Piero's up there and Totti's up there, but it's Del Piero, Totti and Vieri, and then like they'll just kind of get Vieri will have a shot, but there's no one kind of coming forward from the fullback positions or
interplay. This was very much the strategy also in this match, and here's where Panucci comes back in, and one of my favorite moments, because Panucci is kind of the guy, the right defender who's supposed to distribute the ball and especially play them long, as you've just described, like the attack, typical Italian technique style. Thing is, though, he hasn't like drunk his precision potion, so most of them just like fly into no man's land.
Yeah, the balls are not like, you know, they're not like Xabi Alonso long balls. They're very like, you know, English 80s balls that have the ball in the right back position, have no pressure.
Nowadays, it's not just Xabi Alonso, it's like even Mats Hummels or whomever, they can play these balls. But back in the days, I don't know whether it was just Panucci or whether it was like more general thing. It just didn't work out. But then this one time, this one South Korean player actually like attempted to actually reach one of Panucci's balls, and so he jumped sky high, but the thing was that he was touched or pushed a bit by one of the Italian players, which put him into a kind of a forward motion, so this made him actually do a 360 flip forwards, which was like an impressive act of athleticism, but quite unintentionally executed actually.
Yeah.
But it looked amazing. So this was kind of my so shit it's good moment of the match.
Yeah, after the last game, we were kind of looking for like what are kind of moments, you know, if this is like what makes this game incredibly unique. Like, what have you seen in this game that like you can't think of you've seen in any of the other games? So for this one, you know, this is like this incredible flip that this guy does as he goes up for another one of Panucci's balls. But I'd like, if this was the kind of only game, I can't claim to know a lot about Panucci's career, but if this was like the only game that you watched from Panucci's career, I would love to know what his pass completion stat is for something for this game, because it's extraordinary how
I love how he does this with like all the calmness
and he's like
ready to do it over and over again even though it never works.
He's been doing this since he was 8 years old.
Not completing his long passes. But also they do it over and over again, right? They always pass the ball to him, like they never change.
Maldini doesn't seem to do it. Well, I mean, he does it a little bit, but he seems to sort of mix it up. Like sometimes he would play it into the midfield options, but like Panucci gets the ball and he's got one trick and he's gonna do it, and he's gonna aim this kind of long diagonal at Vieri, which, you know, I don't like, one out of five times I would say would be generous works.
It works and
keeps the ball.
Yeah.
Okay, so like we said, the first half kind of runs out. Italy have their goal, they're happy enough, and things aren't you know, looking very dangerous. Koku actually, right towards the end of the first half, gets his face kind of split open kind of remarkably. You don't really see this very often in a football match.
Yeah, but it just happened out of nowhere. I just saw him lying on the ground and then there was blood everywhere.
Yeah, and it's I mean, it's like a rugby cut. Like, it's like, it's like a, like, it's like he's been sort of in a ruck or something. He just goes up for a header. I don't know whether he heads the back of someone. And then I think, and then he just, he's this huge cut down, running down the middle of his face.
Yeah.
And they kind of, so they bandage him up with this kind of, you know, white bandage thing running around that
looks quite peculiar.
Yeah. There's a white bandage around the top of his forehead and into his hair. And there's like a little bit of, like a bit of a tuft bit ticking out the top, like, you know, if you pull the string, it's just going to all unravel. This cut on Koku. Now, in the start of the second half, we see kind of quite kind of similar. Well, actually, a lot, we talked about Totti was a little bit lucky to get a yellow card. Kim Tae-yong is extremely lucky to just get it, to not get anything for this.
Or
you know,
kick.
No, this is the elbow to Del Piero. This is, you know, this, he has a bit of arc pushing himself, and then the referee's looking the wrong way or something, or the referee is, I don't know, doing his thing. This, the whole way through the commentary, the commentator is talking about how this referee has his own peculiar style. He likes to do things his way.
So yeah, I mean, by this point in the match, maybe there has been established that, yeah, Moreno was not having his best day.
No, he's not. He's just very... I think one thing I read, which was, I'm not sure entirely sure, but that he was like, he's good at the decisions were kind of in the middle of the field, but when he has to like travel distances,
yeah,
to the other end of the box,
yeah,
he's a bit slow to keep up, and he's a bit
maybe he's just like lacking stamina.
He's very much, yeah, I think he's very much
usually like out of breath,
yeah,
trying like to, you know, when you feel the vision kind of shrinks. Yeah, because you have to breathe so much and it's like a black. Maybe that's just like
he's there gasping for happens? Air and he's just, yeah, like free game, Korea, Italy, yellow card. But yeah, Kim Tae-yong,
but still he does it with a confidence that's astonishing, right? Like, he's very smuggish. He's just like, no, it's the way it is. Face. Like, he stands his ground. When he makes a call, then that's the way it is.
Do you think the Italian players are shouting at him in Italian, or maybe trying to, like, some of them have a bit of Spanish? Because, what are they...
Like, how do they communicate?
Yeah, because they... seems to be a very one-directional like conversation flow.
Yeah, but I mean, it's supposed to be that way, right, I guess. Like, the referee should not... like get into the muddy business of talking at all. Sometimes, yeah, no, some like sometimes he should direct. But if the players are super agitated, just like running at him and screaming at him, then that's not the point in time where you start like a conversation. I guess. Then you're like, that's the call. Come on, you maybe give like a brief explanation, and then that's it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Totti, if you look at page 67 of the FIFA rulebook, rule 7-2.
Now you just, like, I'm point at VAR, and then that's it. So that's kind of,
it's, blame the TV man. Yeah, it's not my fault.
Who still does a lot of mistakes, but I mean, he's kind of in a safe box, right? Maybe that was just like the whole idea.
Mm.
Save the referees.
Yeah. So in the second half, is a lot more kind of. South Korean pressure. They seem to be a bit all over, kind of Italy building a bit to a crescendo.
Yeah,
but
it starts like in the first half. They're very active at the beginning of the second half, trying to score a goal. But then it kind of trickles out again. I feel like during the second half, there are large chunks of time where nothing much happens, and even like Italy has some chances.
Yeah, and I think. I think the commentator says around like the 70th minute, you know, he's like, Italy haven't played that well, but they'll probably, you know, they're most likely win this game because South Korea haven't really created that many chances.
Which was kind of a feeling that you had as a spectator,
and, you know,
had as well.
And I think kind of like, it's like, it looks kind of like, you know, thousands of football matches where you watch where, you know, the team which is quite a bit better, more savvy than the other one, just enough to win. They don't, you know, they don't wow you. They don't do anything interesting, but they're comfortable to take that win and move on from there. And then kind of towards the last 20 minutes,
because on a shirt it says DR.
Yeah, so when we saw him come up on the scene, it says D.R. Cha. So we thought he's Dr. Cha.
Yeah.
But actually, he's Cha Duri.
Yeah, Cha Duri.
And the commentators, he seems to be the son of... They said he was the son of some famous South Korean footballer.
Yeah.
He was, you know, he comes from good footballing stock, you know?
Yeah.
Got good genes.
Yeah.
And then...
But with surgical precision, he does actually manage to cut open the Italian defence and actually get some plays going.
Yeah, so, you know, it's because he's creating stuff.
So Dr. Cha is actually...
He's an absolute...
It's paying out.
Yeah.
It's paying out.
You know, he's kind of, you know, a dream of some... of if you're working in the tabloid, if you want the kind of red top, you know, Dr. Cha.
Dr. Cha. Cha.
But anyway, so with a couple of minutes to go, there's a kind of slightly kind of aimless ball... comes into the box and it's Finucci. You've dealt with this since you were 10 years old. You know, you've probably played a million games, you know, in your backyard growing up in Italy, where, you know, you get this ball pumped away. He does a lot of things. He neither sort of like decides to make a very convincing decision with it, what he's going to do with it, whether he's going to take it down and control it and then kick it away or knock it away first time. I think he gets caught into two minds what he wants to do, right?
Yeah.
Whether he wants to take it down and then, or else just volley it away.
Which is weird, like, why pick this moment? Like, before he was so confident in playing his long passes into nowhere, but suddenly now he's like, oh, maybe I should make a play, control it faster, and build it up slowly.
Should watch this, guys. So, yeah, he loses his balance. It kind of comes off his knee and, like, both his foot, and then just drops. Just drops perfectly for Silky Juan, who just smashes it into the corner and South Korea level, like, out of like nothing.
Yeah.
You know, out of not really putting a lot of pressure.
No.
And I mean, I'm sure the Italian players were like, what the fuck have we done? Like,
yeah.
Why? How is this game going to to extra time?
Yeah. But it's exhilarating.
Yeah.
Like, the crowd, they go crazy.
Yeah. And
he looks so happy. Like, he just lies down on the pitch.
Yeah.
You can see in his face that this is the greatest moment he's ever had.
And they actually, Italy are almost lucky to get to that extra time, because Dr. Cha strikes up again.
Yes.
Bicycle kick. Which is
so impressive. Although Italy also has chances.
Yeah. This is the crescendo. I mean, so when we were watching the game, and, you know, they're still showing the director's thing of the goal and stuff like this, and, you know, they're still showing the celebrations and, you know, getting fake close-ups of people in the crowd celebrating, and then the ball goes the other end and you just hear this kind of anguish from the referee. It's like, ah! And the commentator's like, ah, no! And it comes back, and just Vieri is sort of laying, like, just planted on the ground.
Painful look on his face.
Painful. Put his back on the, like, on the ground, which is like face of pure pain on his face.
Dead eyes. It's just.
And where this, you know, Italy counterattacked and come up the other end, and the ball come across the 6-yard box, and on his weaker right foot, which comes up quite a bit in this game. If Vieri was on his left foot, then he would have buried that one, but. He comes across and he, I think maybe 4 or 5 yards, you know, he's inside the 6-yard box. He's like 4 yards or something.
He's got so much space.
Yeah, just, you know, he's probably scored a million of these goals in his life, and he just misses it miles over the bar.
It flies into the ground.
Yeah. And maybe at this point, it's like maybe the Italian players were kind of thinking, you know, shit, this is gonna be, this could be, you
this
know,
is extra
yeah,
time.
This is our, this, we're in trouble here, right?
Yeah.
We shouldn't be in this position. There's gonna be some sweaty time to come.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of felt like, you know, when you know it yourself from amateur leagues, like, when you're leading by a goal, your mindset is, okay, we're gonna win this.
Yeah.
And then that's the day's work.
Mm.
And I think that's what most of them felt. And then suddenly, it's like, all open again, and then to actually reactivate your spirits to get back into it, I think that's a very difficult task to master.
And to also, I think Trapattoni had taken off. I think he took off Del Piero for Gattuso. He's you know, set up his Italian team with their banks, the defensive lines.
Yeah,
you know, we've got the goal. We're gonna move on to the quarterfinals. So extra time starts, and South Korea have this really sneaky, nice free kick, which goes.
Oh yeah. The Ronaldinho.
Yeah,
way.
It's you know, the one which goes the wall. The wall jumps and he goes under the wall, and Buffon has to reach right for the corner.
Yeah.
I get it. Now I think the next incident is probably, this is the most, you know, the most contentious part of the game, right? This, the second yellow for Totti.
Yeah.
Where you can see the referee is quite a bit way back, you know. He's not sure.
Well, he has a line of sight. I feel like he has a line of sight.
Yeah.
So he's far away, and before we talked about maybe his issues with being far away, having to run to see enough. But he has a line of sight, and then he sees how Totti faults in the penalty area.
You know these incidents sometimes where it's given that somebody dived and the defenders they're not sure in the moment whether the referee's giving a penalty or a free kick out. I think this incident, there's, you know, the South Koreans aren't like oh shit, like this must be a penalty. There's a little bit of this is probably a free kick out, right?
For them. Yeah. They're not like complaining a lot or scared to death. No. They feel kind of confident that play will like continue in their favour, to whatever this means.
But I think I mean if I was to be completely honest, I think it is a penalty. I think it's one of those where he kind of leaves his left leg in there to get the contact, but it's there, he gets the contact, and then he goes over a little, maybe overly dramatic a little bit, but it's not I don't think it's a dive, at least at the very least.
No, probably not. But still it's not like match manipulation style bad refereeing, right? Like, it's not like, okay, this was such a clear penalty, and for Moreno not actually giving a penalty is something that can only be explained by match manipulation or other conspiratorial stuff. So I feel like, maybe the wrong decision, definitely like important decision for the match, especially because it continues, right? It's not just not a penalty, but
you know, we should also mention that we're playing golden goal here. Yes. I don't know. I think we should have kept golden goal. I think it's
it's great. But no, but it continues because Totti gets the second yellow card, right?
Totti is sent off, so Italy are even more.
He gets the second yellow card for it, which means he's out.
Yeah.
And I think this is like if they wouldn't have gotten a penalty for this, I feel like maybe there would be some complaints, but it would be like that might be it. But because of the way the events unfold, it's actually the second yellow card, and then so at the end, it's not just Italy not having a penalty, but just playing with 10 men on the pitch in extra time, which is already,
I think, your point about
exhausting.
Like if they hadn't got the penalty here and the referee had just played wave play on, then I think maybe people would have complained a little bit, but I don't think they would have been that outrage that it was not a penalty.
Yeah.
But really, like, so this leaves our game with Italy very much in trouble, right? They're 10 men, and they're very clearly now playing for penalties. But then in the second half, they have, kind of at the start of the second half, they have one of these kind of, they have a pass that slid through, and it's those angles where a defender is coming out and a forward is going in, which are the kind of like hard offside rule ones to check. They're the hardest kind of offside ones to see for a linesman in the line, because you immediately think he must be miles offside because the defender has gone one way and he's gone the other way, and then that's left with like a 4 or 5 yard kind of difference between them, so he must be offside, when in fact Tomasi gets slid through, and he's, if you watch back on the replay, he's just, well, maybe just as unfair, but he's onside, he's kind of a bit onside, and he scores, and That would have been Italy through.
Yeah.
But as it was, they were, you know, there was not offside. But it's one of those which we've seen, like, so like before VAR, you saw those ones not given all the time.
Yeah.
And it was crazy.
Again, it was not like a very clear situation where you'd argue that no, the referee or the linesman should have seen this 100%.
Yeah, no, I mean, like,
but of course it adds up. I think that's kind of the underlying thing
of building up. Yeah, and also
the errors build up. Yeah,
you know, in the group stage, Italy had 4 goals ruled out, and 3 of them were probably would have been goals. So there was a little bit of a kind of paranoia.
The Italian football soul already.
Paranoia then, built up about this, but then also, there's a great chance. There was a lovely Italian play where Gattuso gets through.
Yeah,
and he should really score
again. Yeah, like this the early before, like they had their chances.
Yeah, they had a far better chances in the game.
Yeah,
like South Korea in extra time with the man advantage had been kind of dominating the possession a bit, but not really making that much hassle for them.
No.
So, but then with a few minutes before the end, you think Italy have made it 2 penalties. A cross comes in and and jumps above Maldini with this great header into the corner.
It's insane.
Yeah, and it, after there's just like pandemonium. Like Goose hitting the separate manager is like being hugged by everyone. Everyone's, because I think it's just so incredible. You know, usually in football there's like, oh, we've scored celebration. Let's get back and focus, right?
Yeah.
Even if it's a late goal, you know, the time that we've you know, the we've got to be back in defensive positions and stuff, you know, to see it out. But like golden goal, it's like, this is it.
Yeah, but that's what we talked about yesterday, right? Yeah, that's why golden goal is so exhilarating.
Yeah.
Because it ends on such a high note. It's just like, it's the goal, you've won. Celebrate.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you can let it all out. And I mean, in this particular case, it's like the home team, they're celebrating with the whole stadium. Mm. It's insane.
Yeah, so after, and then so they're celebrating, Italians are kind of down on the ground, and South Korea have made it to a quarterfinal, which is incredible.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So after the break, we're kind of going to talk a little bit more into the kind of background, into the controversy of this, what happened afterwards, and, you know, give our kind of final conclusions on it.
Lee Yeon-pyo, good ball in. And yes, they've done it! Oh my goodness me! Ahn Jung-hwan has won it for Korea. They're in the quarterfinals, and Italy are dumped out. He may have missed an early penalty. But
okay, so South Korea have won. They've won the last 16 game, and they go on to play Spain in the quarterfinal, where Spain have knocked out Ireland in the last 16 in a kind of heartbreaking penalty shootout. But and I think, to be honest, if you were going to pick like the most controversial game from South Korea's run into the semi-finals from the 2002 World Cup, it is this game against Spain.
It is against Spain.
It is, and I mean, so there's two goals which get ruled out for Spain.
Yeah.
And so the first one is from a free kick and a header where I have no idea where the referee is, but you know, I think also like 2000s, they were kind of like trying to be like, you know, every once in a while people like say, well, this year we're gonna get a handle on like pulling and pushing in the box and stuff, and they're like, okay, this World Cup we're gonna get it done, and you know, like they'll do a lot of stuff on it, but then like a few weeks later the referees will kind of like, you know, I can't give a penalty every corner or stuff, right?
Yeah.
So there's like a little bit of stuff, but there's like no idea how it gets ruled out. But then the second one is there's somebody running along the end line and he crosses it in, and the linesman calls it for the ball crossing the line, and the ball is at like at least a yard or two away from the line. It's incredible. It's incredible how that one was given. So then after this game, I'm just going to read a quote from a Telegraph article written after South Korea had knocked Spain out on penalties to reach the semifinals. And he goes, "Warning, do not cheer for South Korea. They have no right to be in a World Cup semifinal. Spain should be playing Germany in Seoul. The records say that the Koreans knocked out Spain in a penalty shootout in Gwangju on Saturday. Their records are a lie, and this tournament has descended into farce."
Yeah.
So, I don't know whether we're kind of overdoing this angle of kind of like European or traditional footballing powers being angry about like, you know, balancing the scale, or, you know, this World Cup also was pretty well marked by pretty bad refereeing throughout the tournament. And I think a lot of that was also because FIFA were kind of insisting on a kind of like not a strictly meritocratic way of choosing the match officials. They're trying to like have
more
a spread of
representative.
Yeah, exactly. Much more representative, which is in theory kind of like, okay, well, of course that's a good idea. You know, it's a global game.
Yeah.
Let's have referees. But it does lead these situations where there's referees from smaller leagues, smaller countries, not used to refereeing big games and stuff, or you know, getting overawed and not used to the kind of also like the pace, right, of the game, like the World Cup,
and maybe even the pressure that is exerted onto them, like from the outside before the match, while during the match.
But I mean, to counter that though, the last World Cup had no referees being picked from the Premier League,
because
they were kind of viewed as not good enough, and you know, I mean, a lot of people kind of would agree. I'm always complaining about the referees not being good enough in the Premier League, especially, and you know, that's the kind of like the league with like the most money in the world, and you know, that's, it's interesting.
I mean, what's your take on it? I mean,
with the refereeing? Should it be more representative, or should it be only meritocratic? And then it would be very Euro-centric.
I'm not entirely sure. I think probably it should be a lot. Probably, I mean, I think it should be much more, like, more meritocratic. Like, obviously, you need to have, like, kind of avenues for, like, referees from smaller countries to get into the kind of top ones and, like, referee the big games. But I think, like, sometimes that and that's something that probably should be done and stuff. But I think the idea that, like, it has to be purely kind of representative and stuff, it's a little bit, you know, it kind of does. Is this dilute quality?
It's never purely representative.
No, of course. But, like, it's
there's
just,
always
like,
competition going on. So,
but it's also about, like, you know, it also feeds into, like, the idea of, like, increasing the number of countries in the World Cup as well, because they want that to be more representative, but that's going to dilute the quality more further if they have, like, when it's, say, 40, I'm not sure whether it's 44, I think it's 40, they want it 46 maybe, but they want to increase it from 32, and then there's going to be more countries from around
countries
the world
participating
in the World Cup. Yeah.
But I feel like that's a different discussion, right, because it also changes kind of the whole World Cup, because it's that much more matches, that many more matches and stuff. With the referees, it's kind of it's still the same thing, just maybe referees from more different countries.
Okay, but so Moreno is a kind of quite an interesting
figure.
Yeah,
I mean, okay, now we go back to the end of the Italy match, right?
Yeah.
So we just this was just to argue that it continues.
It never ends. If this Guardian article is to say anything, it never ends.
And kind of the European football sold is very hard, because also Spain drops out due to refereeing mistakes.
Yeah.
One of the most important figures, especially with regards to our match, in this regard, is Byron Aldemar Moreno Ruales, who was the referee of that match. And he was quite a controversial figure during that time in general, because also in Ecuador, there were some inquiries made into his refereeing.
This is unbelievable.
especially because there was this one match, which was the home team, Quito, playing against another Ecuadorian team, and they were losing. They were trailing by one goal, and so Moreno gave six minutes of extra time, and then he ended up actually letting the game continue for 12 minutes, I guess. 12 minutes during which actually Quito scored two more goals in order to win, to actually win the match. And this is, of course, I mean, it's okay, if you give two more minutes than you've actually announced, then that's even a bit weird. But, like, just that much more extra time, it's insane.
I mean,
how can this happen?
But I mean, and
like, you just maybe you don't look at your clock like every minute, but like for 6 minutes to just like ignore everything and let the play continue, and two goals happen. Like, maybe after the goal you say, okay, the match is over, but then just like let them score again. That's highly.
The reason that the sort of like the contention is why he did this was, at the time, he happened to be running for a position in the city council in Quito.
In Quito. So the politics of football.
I don't know. Has anybody ever else like tried to win votes by being a football referee? I don't know.
But I guess like supporting certain football clubs and stuff is a thing that gets you credibility, like some points in politics. Mm. Yeah.
But then I think but you think, okay, maybe that's the end of the story of Moreno, and then
because like afterwards he quits his refereeing career. He says that his ratings are too bad. His performance ratings are too bad. Really bad. He really doesn't understand.
And there's a lot of kind of Italian kind of almost kind of conspiracy theories about him going to the US afterwards and like buying a new car and stuff like this and having like a new, you know, all this like holiday paid for and stuff. Yeah, yeah, he said he was just visiting his sister and stuff, but it's all a bit weird.
Yeah, So then that thing happens. The one thing at the airport. Do you want to get into it?
Yeah. So in 2010, he's traveling to JFK Airport in New York, and he looks at the people that checking, you know, the customs and stuff. They look, this guy looks very, very nervous. I mean, maybe we should check him out. And then he gets arrested, and a customs official found he has hard objects on his stomach, back, and both of his legs. And he was apparently he was carrying at least 10 bags of heroin.
So that was like 6 kilograms of heroin.
Yeah.
In his underpants. That's insane. That's just insane.
Yeah.
I mean, I checked the market value. It's kind of hard to find it out, but like the street value must have been like more than half a million US dollars at that time.
Mm.
Which is quite a lot of money. Which might also explain his different lifestyle. Maybe it was not the refereeing thing. Maybe it was just trafficking.
Yeah, maybe it was actually.
That's, of course, we don't know. We
that's
don't
what
know.
Was financing his refereeing career.
But what we do know is that this happened at the airport in 2010. So that's insane, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And then, so I think we should also like a very bizarre part of the story is also, so the goal scorer who scored the goal for South Korea in An Jung-won, which knocked Italy out, the golden goal, he actually played for an Italian football club, Perugia.
Yeah.
And afterwards, the chairman, after he'd scored the goal and, you know, all this kind of horror and sort of like controversy is kind of being built up, the chairman of Perugia says that that gentleman will never set foot in Perugia again, and he gets sacked from his
because
club in Italy.
The owner said he wanted more Italians on his team. So it's not he's not just a sore loser. It's also like a bit xenophobic.
Yeah.
So that's It's just like the Italians are very, very sore about this one. They also name a row of public toilets after Moreno, after the referee.
Mm.
Ann gets sacked. So yeah, that's yeah. It has implications that go way beyond the match.
Yeah, but I think like generally our kind of conclusion, or we kind of agree pretty much on the analysis with it. Like the refereeing is bad. I think it's, you know, undeniably kind of like pretty bad, you know, he's very all over the place and stuff, but it's very hard to see like that it's like extremely one-sided. It's not blatant, the kind of one-sidedism. It's not like, you don't get the impression from kickoff that like that everything is going to South Korea, that has been kind of set up, established that he was gonna be the one.
Not at all. I rather feel like it's kind of random refereeing errors that added up. It in the end turned out to be kind of hurtful for the Italian ambitions in the World Cup.
Yeah.
But it was definitely, it doesn't feel like match fixing to me.
Okay. So I think we've covered everything to do with this game. Leon, it's been a pleasure as always.
It was so much fun.
We're not entirely sure what will be next on the playlist. Next historical controversy or interesting story we'll be looking at, but there will be another podcast out soon. Thanks for listening. Bye bye.
Excited to be here again soon. Bye.
Network.